Welcome to the Think Christian podcast. My name is Josh Larson, and I want to let you in on something you might not be aware of. There's no such thing as secular, even in popular culture. No conspiracy theory there, just a little theology. We're going to bring those two things together on this episode as J.R. Forresteros, Claude Acho, and I talk about HBO's Lovecraft Country and Christopher Nolan's Tenet, two conspiracy-minded stories that seem fitting for a year in which many, including Christians, have been eager to embrace imagined plots. First, though, I wanted to share an email we got from a listener, Chad Sanders, responding to our last episode on quarantine hymns. Here's Chad. I appreciated your talk about Taylor Swift and Billie Eilish. Looking forward to checking out Eilish's new song today as I set up my basement remote teaching dungeon. Taylor Swift's folklore will now hold a special place in my memory, as it gave me an opportunity to connect with my daughter on a recent road trip. I wrote about it on Facebook. It's a pretty short read if you want to check it out. As always, thanks for your thoughtful work. Thank you, Chad. Chad's post, which he wrote as a letter, a thank you letter to Taylor Swift, it's really sweet. So we're going to include a link to that in the show notes. That way other listeners can check it out. And as always, if you want to share anything with us, your thoughts on the topics we cover, or a note about the show itself, just email us at tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. We'd love to hear from you. In fact, maybe somebody can explain Tenet to me. I'm going to see if Claude Acho can help out with that in just a bit. But first, let's talk to J.R. Forresteros about Lovecraft Country. HBO's Lovecraft Country combines all sorts of nerdiness. You've got monsters, you've got wizards, cults. Yes, there's theology in there as well. So that means it had to have been catnip for someone like J.R. Forresteros. J.R., we're four episodes in now. What do you make of Lovecraft Country so far?
So I had read the book that it's based on, so I was a little bit more primed, I think, than a lot of people.
Okay.
But one of the surprising things, I think, about the show, maybe for a lot of people, I'd actually be curious for your take on it, is that the episodes are all sort of self-contained adventures that are sort of strung together by the connection of this Black family that's at the center of it. And that's actually very much like the book. The book is... each chapter is a short story that then is, you know, sort of loosely connected. And yeah, there is so much going on. There are some overt horror elements, particularly, and I thought the third episode about the haunted house was very scary. The fourth episode, the one that's most current at the time of recording, was essentially a Goonies episode.
Yeah. You know? A little Indiana Jones, little Goonies. Yep.
Yeah. And then again, having read the book, what's in store for the next episode? I can't wait to see how it's realized and also see the larger reaction to it, because there's some really interesting stuff happening there. So I love that it's reinterpreting old problematic horror stories, H.P. Lovecraft, you know, in the title. I love that it's so explicitly dealing with race. I love that it's bringing a lot of these kind of old horror and adventure tropes to life. I don't know. I think it's terrific. But how have you been enjoying it?
It is wild. And yes, I was not familiar with the book. Vaguely knew that it was riffing on, as you said, famed horror author H.P. Lovecraft's work, which is understood to be, yeah, problematic. I mean, rife with racist metaphors and imagery. So this is a real interesting reimagining of that tradition from a new perspective for a new era by centering on these two main characters, Black Americans, played by Jonathan Majors and Journey Smollett. And they're in Chicago, but do go off on these adventures, these investigations, really, that you're talking about. And along the way, they're encountering fantastic stuff, but also kind of everyday terror. You get the tentacly, toothy, bear-like creatures from, I think it's the very first episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the Shoggoths.
Yeah, you also get racist sheriffs in those episodes. So the show seems to me to be asking, what's worse, the monsters or the white people?
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
And, yeah. You know, and the implication, of course, is sometimes the white people are the monsters. So definitely race is at the forefront here. But what it reminded me of, and again, not having the book to draw from in that way, is Get Out. And Get Out director Jordan Peele is an executive producer on this series. The series producer and the writer is Misha Green, we should note. So yeah, Get Out was, you know, at once clearly concerned with the topic of race, but also it was completely functional as a genre exercise, as this horror movie that worked on those terms. The other thing that Lovecraft Country has reminded me of, and this speaks to your description of it as these individual adventures within each episode, JR, is the X-Files, because that show had side stories involving fantastic things, self-contained mysteries. But then there was this underlying larger conspiracy that the main characters, Scully and Mulder, were investigating throughout the series. Some episodes paid more attention to that than others. Some didn't bother with the conspiracy at all, but it was always underneath there. And the same thing so far, four episodes in, seems to be happening with Lovecraft Country. And here it has to do with these secret societies that the main characters are somehow in their past involved in, or their family has been, in ways they're learning and are also, you know, somewhat connected with these individual stories too. So yeah, it's been fascinating to me. I guess I'm curious, what's been your favorite genre element, JR? Is there, you mentioned the haunted house, there's those monsters in the first episode. Has there been one that's worked best for you so far?
I think they're all terrific. But yeah, by far, I think my favorite was the third episode, which was called The Holy Ghost.
Yes.
You know, and it centers on this house that the young woman believes that she purchased with money that she believes she inherited from her mother. Of course, by the end of the episode, we find out that this white Braithwaite family that is sort of, again, in a classic H.P. Lovecraft story, the Braithwaites would be the main characters, right? And all of the black characters would be the ones being manipulated and sort of used as pawns. Now we sort of spun the camera around. And the people who are being manipulated are front and center and being given the agency. But yeah, when she moves in, she discovers that the house was owned by a man who was some kind of a white supremacist who did some kind of horrible experiments on a lot of the black people who had been kidnapped from their neighborhoods, which again, call, think back to Get Out, right? That's how Get Out opens.
Yep.
Was with
yep.
This young black man being kidnapped by white people to be experimented on. And then, you know, at the end of the episode, we have this, I thought, pretty astounding exorcism scene where the young woman is able to call all of these black ghosts back to their true selves, whereas they began sort of marked by what he had done to them. And by the end of the ceremony, by the end of the ritual, they've been freed from the violence that he had done to them, and they become united with her. The white ghost keeps saying, "Get out of my house, get out of my house, get out of my house." And then she's able to claim that phrase and use it to drive him out. And I thought that was such a powerful picture of how we need to reclaim legacies like H.P. Lovecraft's, who, you know, H.P. Lovecraft named his cat the N-word. And I mean, in his letters, he wrote very openly and proudly about white supremacy and his convictions that non-white people were less than, you know, it's not something you have to read very carefully to see in his stories and in his literature, right? And so people who grew up loving horror and loving, I mean, Stephen King is hugely influenced by Lovecraft. The first season of True Detective, people kept talking about waiting for the tentacle monsters. That was directly a Lovecraft thing, right? You can't explore the genre without seeing his influence. And yet then we're trying to wrestle with that. And I thought this episode was such a great picture of what it looks like to reclaim the victims of that violence and restore their agency and their voice. And yet at the same time, this was through and through a horror episode. You know, it was very much a genre exercise. So you didn't have to sacrifice the genre for the legacy, right? And I don't know, I think about all of the discussions we're having right now about legacy, whether it's decolonizing the church or these Confederate monuments, or like, it seems like everywhere you go, we're having these conversations. Using horror was such a cool picture of that struggle.
Well, and that haunted house episode is a good example of the show using both fantastic horror and real life horror, because the experimentation element brings to mind elements from real history, right? Henrietta Lacks, African-American woman whose cells were used without her permission. And so it's drawing on the historical record while also playing with these genre elements like ghosts, like exorcisms, like haunted houses.
Even the fact that she was the first black woman to move into this white neighborhood. And so you very literally had the white citizens of this community trying to exorcise her from among them, right? Like her black body was considered monstrous and needed to be cast out. And so you had all of these different negotiations between who belongs and who doesn't, whose house it really is and whose it's not, who deserves to be here and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And again, those are still conversations that we're having today, you know, legacies we're still living in the wake of.
So it's interesting because in this episode and in a lot of the episodes so far, it's kind of showing that the paranoia isn't paranoia. It's real, right? What these characters sense, they know it from their own experience on some level, but this deeper level that there's even more evil going on at them, specifically as Black people, is proven to be true. And so this brings us back to, you know, this larger idea of conspiracy theories, which is really fascinating to me in the context of Lovecraft Country. Just generally, let's talk about conspiracy theories a little bit because they've long been a mainstay in pop culture, right? We love to have them in our stories, but they do seem to have taken hold in the culture at large lately in a particular way, particularly with some Christians who have proven susceptible to claims about everything from vaccines to QAnon to rumors related to the pandemic. So just generally, what do you think it is about human nature that makes conspiracy theories so tantalizing, JR?
I think if you go back to the creation story in Genesis 1, there's this movement out of chaos towards order that is sacred, you know, that God is ordering these things that are nonsensical and putting them into a space where we can live. And so I do think in our DNA, we are like hardwired to crave order and sense and clarity. And I think one of the big struggles in our world being as interconnected as it is that the evil in the world and the chaos in the world and the unpredictability and the inexplicability in the world is much more in our faces the more interconnected we are. And I think people crave an explanation. We want to know why children are trafficked, right? We want to know why our political system is such a mess. And conspiracy theories give us something to hold on to. They make sense out of all of this, you know, disparate data. They give us someone to blame. They give us a boogeyman, right? And so I think for a lot of us, it's easier to hold on to those explanations and certainties than it is to confront the reality that the nature of evil is actually chaotic and inexplicable. And sometimes it's therefore much harder to imagine how we resist it.
Yeah, it's more complicated because sometimes the conspiracy theory might sound outlandish, but it's still an answer that you can wrap your mind around and move on, I guess, is kind of the difference here.
Even in Lovecraft Country, right? Like, I think it's easier for some people to believe that the reason white people are being racist is because they want to use Black people in some kind of arcane ceremony than, no, they're just racist and there's not really a good explanation or a good reason. And all of us today try to imagine living in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the, you know, era depicted in Lovecraft. And I think most of us can't imagine ourselves, especially if we're white, like you and I are, we can't imagine ourselves behaving the way the white people in the show do. And yet, that's how the vast majority of white people behave back then. And so we want, it's easier to believe in secret racist cults than it is to just think that racism is somehow this insidious, inexplicable thing.
Yeah. And, you know, if we don't have any sort of history with that, then we can remove ourselves from the problem. I think that's part of it, too. So, you know, it's interesting because, again, the show is showing that there is a system designed to discriminate against Black people in the United States. That is true. It's been proven true by history. We still see it today. You can trace the line, like the documentary 13th does, from slavery to the criminal justice system today and how prisons are run. And so I'm still wondering, though, what might be the distinction from that truth, that reality, to other more baseless conspiracy theories? I mean, we've kind of touched on this. I wonder if it's something about that complicit element. Whereas what Lovecraft Country is revealing, both the fantastic and the historical, we can, if you are a white person in the United States, be complicit in that. And that is harder to wrestle with maybe than just a monster. And so I feel like that's the distinction maybe with Lovecraft Country, is that it's showing us that there may be monsters, but they're also complicated monsters. And the monstrousness being revealed might also be in us. Is that maybe the distinction with the show?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's difficult about a show like Lovecraft Country is we're wanting it to leap up and say, not all white people, you know, and the show is not interested in doing that, right? Mm-hmm. The show wants us to really consider the nature of these institutions and, to your point, how complicit we are in them. And it takes a willingness to do that. I was doing some study for a sermon and I came across someone who said, you know, we would rather feel good than be good. And I think, you know, one of the things that conspiracy theories let us do is feel better about what's going on without actually having to do anything about them. You know, if I can blame this like secret sex cabal for child trafficking, well, I can't fight a secret sex cabal, right? So then at least if I post about it and complain about it, then I've raised awareness. I feel better, even though I haven't actually taken any steps to alleviate a real problem.
You know, I was listening on Christianity Today's Quick to Listen podcast earlier this summer. They were talking about conspiracy theories, and Drew Johnson was on there, the director for the Center for Hebraic Thought. And he said something interesting that I think might help us to discern when to be alert to forces that are truly at work against us or against others, and when to recognize if we're being manipulated into believing unfounded things and ultimately then bearing false witness, which I think is sometimes what happens with these conspiracy theories. So I just wanted to quote Johnson. Again, this is Drew Johnson. I would also like to point out that the prophets, including Jesus and the apostles, do talk about a conspiracy you can rely on. And that's basically that whenever you have power structures and sin, which is the only thing I've known in my world, you will have people who will use their power to exploit the vulnerable and the weak. So again, that was Drew Johnson. And I think that speaks to the sort of corrupt structures that are revealed in Lovecraft Country. And these are structures, as we said, still at work today, structures many of us are complicit in. So it's far harder to wrestle with those realities, you know, especially if they're self-incriminating. It's much easier to buy those simpler, even if they're outlandish, answers that are offered by the conspiracy theories out there. I assume, JR, you're going to stick with the series to the end, having read the book and already knowing a little bit what's coming and looking forward to that. Does that sound right?
Absolutely. It's been a great ride so far. My wife and I have been watching and enjoying it. And I think it's only just beginning to comment on our racial relationships in America. So I'm very excited to see what happens next. What about you?
Yeah, I'll be sticking with it. I'm watching on my own. My wife, not quite as into horror. And I thought about it at first before I really knew what we were going to get into. But yeah, by the haunted house episode, some of that, it gets pretty gory. So
yeah, I felt like the first two episodes, you know, which are, they're a whole story. They're not each self-contained. We're like mild. I mean, they had the monsters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Other than that. But then, yeah. So people were like, how scary is it? And I was like, oh, I don't have a good metric, but I don't think it's that scary. And then like episode three, I was like, okay, like, yeah. It's pretty scary.
So you had a lot of people are like, thanks, JR. You told me it wasn't scary.
Yeah, right. But then I don't know. I thought episode four, my friend Clay compared it to the Goonies, which I thought was a really apt comparison.
Yeah, that's probably, well, there is one moment with a transformation of a character that gets pretty intense, but it definitely felt less horror than the Haunted House episode for sure. So you never know what you're going to get with Lovecraft Country. That's the one given. So I'm going to stick through to the end and see where it goes. Thanks, JR, for jumping on the show. I know you were looking, last time we talked, you were looking to write about both Bill and Ted Face the Music and maybe New Mutants for the TC website. We didn't have the room. I'm curious, did you end up doing that somewhere else that we can plug?
I'm still probably going to write up at least something small, so I'll keep you posted.
Okay, yeah, do that. I'm sure you'll be tweeting about it. So listeners, you can follow JR Forresteros at JR Forresteros on Twitter and find out when one of those pieces might go up. And yeah, just keep up with the other things he's involved in. Thanks again, JR.
Thank you, Josh. Always a pleasure. What do we conceal? What do we reveal? Make that decision every day. What is wrong with me? It's what's wrong with you. There's just so much I want to say.
Everybody's got a secret, she says. Oh, how true. That was Alicia Beth Moore, known by her secret identity as Pink, with Secrets, a somewhat lesser-known track from her 2017 album Beautiful Trauma, and word on the street is that it's one of 30 songs gathered on this episode's corresponding Spotify playlist around the theme of conspiracy theories. This was a fun list to build, as artists have been dealing with issues like paranoia, fear, exposure, and yes, secrets for a long time. Pink's track gets very personal with the question, taking it to an introspective place, while others on this list, like Midnight Oil, Pearl Jam, and Sufjan Stevens, are more about demanding the truth, and others, including cuts from the 77s, Nick Jonas, Rockwell, and Toby Mac, take a more playful approach as they look for answers that will last, and there are tracks from the Hollies, Paramore, Buffalo Springfield, Dylan, and the Talking Heads, whose life during wartime reminds us that this ain't no fooling around. We'll hear a bit of that one a little bit later in the show here as well. It turns out there are lots of ways to approach this whole idea of conspiracies and secret knowledge, even beyond the whole Illuminati thing. But yeah, we'll touch on that one too. Hello, I'm John J. Thompson, your secret tour guide through the musical shadows, rumors, and outright lies. I'm as baffled as the next person when it comes to the sheer number of folks getting caught up in these theories, but I've noticed that artists have been dealing with these ideas for a long time, and some have gotten caught up right in them themselves as well. I hope you'll enjoy this mix, and if you are sure no one followed you here, and you have some suggestions of songs that touch on the subject that I should add, knock exactly 5 times on the back door and then tweet at me at John J. Thompson, and I'll see what I can do. To find the mix, just search for the Think Christian profile in Spotify. This mix will be the current episode until the next one launches. Then it will be listed separately. We also put all of our mixes in a massive archive. If you ever want to just spin hours and hours of great, interesting songs, you can do that. Until next time, this is your fearless DJ, John J. Thompson, practicing my secret hand gestures and getting ready to hold my breath until the chemtrails fade. Peace.
Claude Acho has emerged from an actual theater to join me to talk Tenet. Claude, was this your first time seeing a big screen movie since the start of the pandemic? What was the experience like?
It was. I was trying to think. I think the last thing I saw in theaters was The Rise of Skywalker, which I saw twice. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the last time I was in the theaters. So this was the first time back. I mean, honestly, it felt really good. I really had it to myself. There was one other person maybe in the front row.
Oh, wow.
I was way in the back. So it felt nice and safe.
Private screening.
I know. It was cool. Made just for me. It felt great to be back in a theater. So I really enjoyed that. But yeah, it was a little bit eerie being in there by myself. But, you know, I felt like it was a custom-made movie just for me.
We felt good about our experience. There were a few more people there. We were in a large auditorium that they were capping capacity at 40%. But I bet the place held 250 and there were 32 people in there. So people are being very tentative, and rightly so, about going back into theaters. But I was glad that it was, you know, that small of a group and we were well spaced out. So it did feel good. I'm with you to be able to just be in front of that massive screen again. I've been suffering these last couple of months, you know, without being able to do that. So that felt good. I felt good about the situation. And I don't know. We'll see how we both felt about the movie itself. But we don't want to get into spoilers, I don't think, because, you know, especially others may not get a chance to see Tenet for a while for all the reasons we talked about. So let's keep this simple as a setup. Basically, this is the latest from Inception director Christopher Nolan. And John David Washington stars here as an American espionage agent who's identified only as the protagonist. Now, in the movie's opening sequence, it's set during this covert operation. The protagonist witnesses something that's unexplainable. This bullet that seems to reverse out of the concrete it had impacted. So basically goes backwards. We're kind of left confused too. And when the dust settles after all this, the protagonist is recruited by this shadowy group to investigate the bullet's source. Now, that is simplifying something that is eventually so complicated. Claude, I'll admit, this is the first Nolan film I was completely lost in. And I know some others have felt similarly. I've heard from people who are like, what are you talking about? I was with it the whole time. So where were you at? What was your level of confusion with Tenet, Claude?
My level of confusion was at an all-time high. I've never been more confused in a theater than that experience. That was one of the most confusing things. And I think, you know what, I enjoyed the movie. I think what was confusing about it was there was just enough of a thread of understanding that I could grab hold of. And the other 99%, I felt at a loss and was trying to piece together. And so I felt like I could understand just a fraction of what was happening. And the rest of the time, my head was sort sort of spinning. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, I found it an enjoyable experience. It's something to come back to, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to be revisiting it at some point to pick up on what I might have missed. And that was the key for me, too. I don't mind being confused by movies that are intentionally vague. The ones that are, you know, allowing the audience to fill in the gaps with their own interpretations, their own experience of the story. But you're right. There are basic rules at play in Tenet that I didn't have the grasp on. And because of that, I was lost during sequences that depended on either employing those rules or breaking those rules and setting new ones. So it was a little disappointing to me on that level, especially compared to other Nolan films. They're always a challenge. I mean, this is nothing new, but this one, I feel like the challenge, the bar was a little too high, at least for me. I do think that Tenet, though, offers something interesting when it comes to this topic of conspiracy theories that we're considering on this episode. And I guess, first, Claude, I'm just curious, what have you made of the fact that some Christians have been particularly eager to engage with conspiracy theories as of late, just if you have any general sense of that? And then also, you know, when it comes to Tenet, how do you think Tenet possibly speaks to that? This is a story largely about the protagonist uncovering a conspiracy. And so I think it's interesting how he goes about that. But yeah, I just like to see what your impression has been about this kind of conspiracy-laden year we've been experiencing.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting on that front. You know, I think one of the things that is helpful to remember is just even reading through the New Testament, you know, we find that, you know, the early church was susceptible to their own versions of conspiracies or myths and controversies in various ways. So it's even just thinking about, you know, 1 Timothy, the first chapter as Paul is leaving Timothy at Ephesus and he puts Timothy in charge and he tells him, you know, correct these people who are devoted to endless myths and genealogies and who love these quarrels and love to just stir up trouble and speculations rather than advancing God's work, which is through faith. And so I think it's something that's helped me a little bit to recognize that this isn't new ground for us. Yet at the same time, I think we have to do better. And I think there's, you know, just the need for us as believers to be people who care for the truth, but also understand that any attempts to be really reductionistic or any attempts to try to speak definitively about things that are happening in real time and try to uncover the motives of people that we don't know or to connect circumstances that we can't be certain about, you know, that's really not in service to God's truth. And usually it's not very wise either. So I think on one hand, it's not a surprise, it's discouraging, but I think we have some New Testament examples that show us that this is something that we can drift into and can be some troublesome waters.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it is always good to get that larger context. And it does come down to the wanting an easy answer, which is an understandable impulse. It is embedded in human nature a little bit. And so you can understand that desire to have, if not a simple explanation, it may be a very outlandish explanation, but it's something we can wrap our minds around. So Tenet is, you know, as I said, it's this exercise of investigation. The protagonist is confronted with something confusing, something baffling. And in the process of seeking an answer, I think the distinction for me is maybe how he goes about in search of evidence. And, you know, as believers, that investigation should be familiar. I mean, we're not called to be passive consumers of an easy religious answer. As you're saying, that would be nice if Christianity offered a simple answer, but Christianity is complicated. In a lot of ways, it's counterintuitive. It requires some sort of investigation, basically, to take in this complex story of salvation. And to look back, you know, you offer the early church model. Look back at Jesus himself, who studied the prophets, right? Held their words up against the will of God. And I think we're called to do something similar, is not just swallow bits and pieces of scripture that seem to offer easy answers, but really analyze them in the context of God's whole story. And then also apply them to the embodied experience of our lives. And I think that embodied element brings us back to Tenet. So if you look at the protagonist, and we'll have to dance around spoilers here, but he actually has skin in the game. I mean, literally, as the movie goes on, what he is witnessing becomes his experience, and it moves him to reflection. And even as it moves towards revelation, that revelation is always something that is coming out of his work and his effort. So it's not work that's been done for him. It's not some story he swallowed that someone else has concocted for him. And I wonder if that resonated with you at all, Claude, this sense of embodied investigation that the movie kind of models, and if that's any sort of model for us as Christians when we are faced with, you know, really bewildering times or questions that we want to have easy answers with, but it might just not be that easy.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. The movie has that investigative element to it, the sort of moving from place to place, seeking information to build on what has been gathered previously. And without getting into spoiling anything, there is some revelation that comes towards the end that's pretty powerful. So I think that's a really helpful model and frame of reference. And one of the things I think that's instructive for us talking about Tenet through this lens is there's a line early in the film where the protagonist is beginning to have some explanation handed over to him about, you know, this new world that he's stepping into or this new information. And it's a line, I think it's something like, you know, don't try to understand it, just feel it. Hmm. But what's interesting is that he really tries to do both, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't just take what was given to him and, as you said, swallow it wholesale. He tries to do both. He tries to feel it, you know, intuit what's happening. But then the rest of the movie, he's trying to understand exactly what's happening. So he actually, you know, takes what's offered to him, but he's, you know, wise enough, smart enough to not just take it on those terms, but to really grab the fullness of what's been offered to him and to really test it out for himself. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking even again of the example in Acts 17, the Bereans, as the Apostle Paul goes and preaches to them and they hear the message from Paul, but then they look at the scriptures every day to see if what Paul said was really true. And so that same investigative element. So I think you see that through the movie. And, you know, there's even this moment where, again, there's a lot of explanation happening to the protagonist. He goes and he searches, and then he has to download information from people in conversation. There's one point where he asks a question as he's learning about, you know, this new world and this new realities and so forth. And he says, well, what about free will? And it was almost a moment where I laughed out loud because it just, he plays it so deadpan, and yeah. I wish he could have had more emotion in the movie. But, you know, he's again, it's, I think, as an example, it's like, well, what about this, right? It's
yeah.
not, things are not super cut and dry. What's happening around us, what's happening in the world, the way life works is not simplistic. The gospel is simple, but the way it intersects with our time and our history and our culture is complicated. So I think that investigative element, that willingness to step into complication, if there's any movie that shows us that things are not simple, this is the movie to show us that.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you say that the gospel is simple, because I didn't want to make it sound like you need a PhD to be a Christian. You know, that's not the case at all. I mean, you're right. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That's the story. And we're told, love your God, love your neighbor as yourself. That is, in essence, all we need to know. But it is the context. It is our personal context, the historical and the cultural context, where things do get complicated and require, you know, our own investigation. That line you mentioned early on where the scientist does say, you know, you don't have to understand it, just feel it. That was so frustrating to me in the movie. And I think it's because it was partly because of what we're talking about here is it goes against, just as you said, the path the protagonist follows, you know? And I think that line could be sold to some of us as Christians is don't worry about understanding it. Just what makes you feel good is That's what right. you need to believe. And I think a lot of times, you know, what we need to distrust is not some shadowy conspiracy, but when we are willing to accept something because it makes us feel good, because in our fallen state, that is an untrustworthy move to make, right? We know that at some level, we can't trust ourselves. We need to investigate ourselves. I think that's the constant path of the Christian. It's the path of sanctification in it to a degree. You know, it's not that we have been saved and we're perfect and we've got all the answers. No, it's that we have been reoriented and we know the path to follow, but that path is going to involve more investigation of ourselves and of what's out there, of our faith. And that's hard work. It's difficult work. But I think in the end, it's the good work compared to just buying something that makes us feel good or us secure in our position, which is really, you know, what a lot of these conspiracy theories are meant to do. So you mentioned John David Washington, Claude, and you wishing that he could show some more personality there. I'm kind of with you. He was so good in Spike Lee's Black Klansman. And I do think we get a little bit of that sort of fire to him in the early scenes of this movie, which really play a lot like a Bond flick before things get a little too complicated. But yeah, once the physics take over, he's kind of reduced to just being this more passive listener in a lot of ways, and he doesn't have much of an opportunity to jump in with a good line or a good moment here or there. I wish the movie gave him more of that.
Yeah, same. I mean, he is one cool cat through the movie. So yeah. I like that. It reminded me of, you know, some other older films where there's sort of the singular male figure who's going on this crazy adventure and nothing can shake him. He's unflappable, but, you know, I wanted a little more character, a little more story, a little more emotion. You know, he seemed robotic, but I think that was, you know, obviously intentional and, you know, it plays in some ways and it works not so well in others. But yeah, you know, there's some great scenes though. There's some, you know, I ordered my hot sauce an hour ago or, you know.
Yeah, that's a great example where he adds a little.
Yeah, you know, so I think there's enough there that people will enjoy.
Yeah, I wish he, the scene like that is kind of like, you're like, okay, we're getting a little of his personality and his unique experience here thrown in and a little bit of, you know, his attitude as well, like how he's handling these situations as an individual rather than just this cog in Nolan's grand machine, which is sort of what he ends up becoming.
Right, because to even connect it, you know, further to what we've been discussing, you know, as he adds bits of information and understanding, just as we do, as we gain a fuller understanding of, okay, this is the way the world works, or wow, this is complicating what I previously thought. You know, we register that in certain ways, we carry that in certain ways, and so, you know, the movie didn't seem as interested in showing how he carried that because we didn't really know who he was in some of those ways. And obviously with the name, the protagonist, you know, he's supposed to stand in some ways there too. But, you know, I think on our side, as we think about this as viewers, as we gain a more complicated, fuller understanding of, you know, what's happening around us, that hits us. And we have to carry that in certain ways that changes, you know, our outlook. And so I would love to see that come through a little bit more for him, but no, I understand what was happening there.
Well, Nolan has had a habit of working with actors more than once. Michael Caine has been in almost every one of his movies. And of course, Christian Bale in The Prestige and the Batman films. So maybe he will work again with John David Washington and give him a chance at a film that will not confuse us quite as much, Claude.
I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind that.
Well, we have more Tenet coverage on the TC website. Ryan Guerra is working on a piece that'll probably involve some spoilers, but if you have seen it, you'll want to dig into that one. And it should be up by the time this episode posts. Also, Lamar Jackson wrote a post about a couple weeks ago now where he looked at Nolan's previous films, went through all of them, highlighted a few, and kind of came to this conclusion that you could describe Nolan's career as a works-based cinema. So I loved that take on Nolan's work. We'll link to both of those posts in the show notes for this episode. Thanks, Claude, for braving the theater and coming on to talk about Tenet with us.
My pleasure.
Talking Heads' David Byrne sounding quite paranoid there on life during wartime. That's one of the perfectly on-point songs that John J. Thompson chose for this episode's Spotify playlist. This has been a paranoia-inducing year, so it's understandable that we'd look to easily available answers, even if they're wild ones, as long as they help us to make some sense of this fallen world. But Christians are called to be wiser, and especially on guard to lies that inflame our fears, or serve our self-interests, or enable the preservation of power. And to those who might say that Christianity itself is a conspiracy, well, no conspiracy aims to give up power. And that's exactly what Christ did on the cross. Thanks to Claude Acho and J.R. Forresteros for peeking behind the curtain with me on this episode. They're both easy to find on Twitter, at J.R. Forresteros and at Claude Acho. I'm at Larson on Film on Twitter, and you can also follow TC at Think Christian. If you haven't checked out our YouTube channel yet, we've got about 10 episodes up there now, and it's worth looking into just to see J.R. Forresteros' beard. Search for the Think Christian podcast on YouTube. No matter how you're listening, we do appreciate the support. If you Apple Podcasts listeners want to leave a review of the show, that would be great. We could use a few new ones. Just scroll down on our show page on Apple Podcasts, and you can leave a rating and a review. The Think Christian Podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Bassett. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back in a couple of weeks to consider how another aspect of our pop culture fandom connects with our faith.